You're listening to EPN, the ePodcast Network.
Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network, your channel for exclusive interviews with entrepreneurs, small business owners, and some of the world's top executives who share business strategies and insights that can all help you build your business, leading to your business success. And now, broadcasting from anywhere between Brazil, South America to Los Angeles, California, it is your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Today, we are speaking with Mr. Leon Walker, the managing partner of DL3 Realty. Leon is one of Chicago's most active community developers, including opening the nationally recognized Whole Foods-anchored shopping center in the Inglewood neighborhood in Chicago's South Side. Leon is committed to revitalizing the city's most desperate neighborhoods, creating a model for other urban communities to follow. Mr. Walker, a pleasure to have you with us today on Enterprise Radio.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So tell us, Mr. Walker, what exactly is venture development?
Venture development describes a new way of approaching community development, which is really a blend and mix. It sits in between a more mission-driven development process and an entrepreneurial, more opportunistic development process. So where you typically have on the mission side, you have charitable, mission-driven nonprofits operating who pursue projects that are just, really about supporting and fulfilling a mission or a directive they may have in a particular neighborhood or community or with a particular population. And then you have others who are developers who are really pursuing financial and economic returns. What we're saying now is that there's an opportunity here in many inner city communities, urban neighborhoods, infill opportunities to pursue a kind of engaged development that not only provides attractive financial returns, but also lifts those around. So it really is a way of doing revitalization as opposed to gentrification, where you're displacing populations. You're much more focused on how do we bring projects that are high impact that also have a ripple effect in the community.
And to further help the listener and also from your perspective, why is all this important?
Well, we have, particularly with our approach to venture development, which is available through a white paper, a discussion paper we released last fall, a month or so ago. You can find that paper at dl3realty.com /venture development. There you'll be able to download a free copy of the paper, and it goes into details about where we are in the cycles with our communities, with many urban markets experiencing a tale of two cities, where you have, tremendous growth in population with the resettling of downtowns and re-urbanization of our population, as many people are aging and wanting to come back to cultural centers, as we have millennials looking for quality of life preferences over, and more activity and a different way of working. So cities offer a lot of things that are attractive to people, but then you have those that are stuck, that are mired, that are in situations where they're in deserts, whether they be food deserts, medical deserts, pharmacy deserts, education deserts, all these, kind of negative sort of hopeless situations where, we're wondering how do we reconcile, this tale of two cities. And I think that, I always believe that there, are three reasons to do anything important. And, there really is, the reason that it fits within your value system. You are morally compelled to do something. And that's a good reason. Only problem is when you're talking about organizational, institutional directives, if the person, the leader who had that moral judgment, who had that compulsion to do something good, leaves, or the company is acquired, your organization changes leadership, then you might lose that, you know, directive. A second reason, is if you're legally required to do it. Well, if you're legally required or compelled to do certain things that are beneficial, like CRA, for example, that banks must do certain things in order to retain their charters, that's good. But, of course, laws can change over time. So that's not really always, you know, the most sustainable way to go. So for me, I'm a University of Chicago-trained attorney and business person, having gone to the business school there as well. And I said, I need to look at, you know, how do we make things sustainable? And the way to do it is to do it when it has a business case, an economic case that's sustainable. In other words, people can and will do well by doing good. And so these venture development opportunities are unique in that we have a moment in time where, you know, the desperation or the disinvestment that we've seen in certain neighborhoods are now coming to a point, an inflection point, where the anchor institutions that are sitting, that are living in those communities want to see a different sort of relationship develop. So we have a chance to have an economically viable, sustainable development solution in communities that where we can now, given where we are and understanding that these populations and these neighborhoods are vital to the overall growth of the region, that we want to engage them. We want to lift them. Look how much lost talent there is in these communities that we're not tapping into because we're not putting, you know, forth the kind of investment necessary to support and, you know, build a quality of life and an economic life for these communities that is sustainable. So for us, we really believe that this is a message that needs to get out so that people in other communities, not just Chicago where we operate, can also see the value of this approach.
And thanks, Mr. Walker, for the thorough coverage on the importance. Now, on another note, who inspires you or who inspired you?
Well, you know, I'm the son of two public school teachers. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, and I remember when many of these communities had legendary leaders who, you know, were stalwarts, not only in the community, but were also nationally recognized for the things they were accomplishing. And, you know, we had the largest black bank here in the South Side of Chicago, in the South Side of Chicago in Chicago. We had the largest insurance company. We had the largest, you know, media companies. We've had the largest in a number of industries, and entrepreneurship was flourishing, you know. You know, if you look at the history of Chicago, it compares, you know, and maps, you know, to other, you know, urban environments where you had a large industrial base that provided a safe and secure middle class job opportunities for the residents, right? Well, when that left, and there are a lot of reasons for that, you know, became cheaper for them to produce and manufacture in different locations outside of the city. You had those jobs leave. Then you have, you know, waves and waves, successive waves of things happening to where people are choosing not to live in the city as they leave, as the demographics change, you lose population, you lose the balance in a community, and where a tipping point can be a positive thing to take you in a virtuous cycle, you can have a tipping point go the other way, and you end up in a vicious cycle. And so what we've been able to see is that in many of these communities, there have been, you know, demographic changes that have led to a vicious cycle. And what we're talking about with venture development is a way of, you know, going the tipping point the other way to encourage a virtuous cycle of economic development. So my dad, my mom, who were public school teachers, they inspired and put something inside of me that says, you know what, I want to be able to help others. Want to do well myself, but I also want to help others. And how do I bring that together? You know, as I said before, you know, when I left law school and business school, I had a plethora of opportunities out there in the corporate job market, and I was a partner at the largest real estate services firm in the world, I was working in Los Angeles. I was working in New York. I was traveling, doing large corporate real estate projects when my father got ill and ultimately passed. I had to make a decision. I was in Los Angeles working at the time for a firm called JLL. And I had to make a decision. My next assignment with the firm was going to be in Singapore, you know, and I decided to come back to the South Side of Chicago. And then over the past now, you know, my father ended up passing. I took the last year with him. And then I started to really, you know, dig in to what it meant to be a pillar in the community. But the uniqueness of what I've been able to articulate in this venture development working paper is that, you know, that part of me is important, but the corporate side is equally important. The experience I've had working on large projects, the training that I've had, you know, in a rigorous academic environment, you bring all that together, and that puts me now in the unique position to communicate a new way forward in terms of approaching disinvested communities that sit near or next to anchor institutions.
And most inspiring, no doubt about that. Today we're joined by Mr. Leon Walker, the managing partner of DL3 Realty, here on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Now tell us, what do you look for in an investor?
Yeah, so for example, I know one of the, you know, we had started this approach, and the thing about it that's really unique is that this was not an epiphany or a revelation in the middle of the night. This has been more of an evolution over time and, you know, learning from, you know, the wins and, you know, the successes as well as some of the challenges and losses. So, you know, you have to, this is a, we started this work really in earnest in 2005 when we went to one of the most disinvested communities on the far south side of the city, the Roseland community, and began to do work there. This, as you may know, was the same community that President Obama was in when he started his work, you know, in Oakville Gardens, in Roseland, in community organizing. So it's been a community that has had a lot of disinvestment, but it also has a lot of energy, a lot of committed folks who are trying to figure out how do they, you know, provide for their families, provide an environment of safety, security, and, you know, that allows them to thrive. So it's a lot of great community leaders out there, so you get a chance to learn from them as you're applying your trade. And as I was developing in that community, I brought the first new bank to that community in over 40 years. Then I built a medical office building, which became the first development in the city of Chicago to use new market tax credits for new construction. I had the CDFI fund and the treasurer's office from the Washington, D.C. come out to visit us and say, this is what we're talking about when we're talking about using new market tax credits for high-impact community development, where you could put a medical office across the street from a struggling safety net hospital to decompress that emergency room and create a new vision, a new way forward for that hospital to be sustainable, not just taking tax credits to put into projects at the time. There was a famous hotel project in the city of Chicago that received tax credits for a renovation that, you know, was downtown Chicago. But because of census tracts and the way that you can evaluate those transactions, that deal also got awarded tax credits. And we were at the same time coming up with something in a disinvested neighborhood, helping to save a struggling hospital. And that's why we got that attention. I went on from there. I'm starting to understand that what we do in healthcare is in healthcare real estate, particularly is not just, you know, about healthcare, but really is more about sick care as we've built dialysis centers and other sorts of healthcare products. And I started looking at our food and understand that if we really want to bend the healthcare and the medical cost curve, we got to look at prevention, and food is a big part of that. And right around that time, in 2010 and 2012, there was information coming out after the ACA, but also on this thing called food deserts by another friend of mine, Mari Gallagher, who was doing that research here in Chicago, and she's taking it nationally. And so you start to evolve this process and understanding what is really required to be a community developer that uses sophisticated tools, complex capital stacks, in order to execute projects that not only lift the community, but are financially viable for the investors who come in on a private market rate basis. So what we really search for and look for is those investors who have an interest in going into communities that are traditionally and historically disinvested, but who offer great promise because those communities are one. They're located in a historically successful location. I mean, once was a vibrant community. The corner that we're looking to redevelop or develop on was once a vibrant and successful corner. For example, our Whole Foods project with Starbucks and Chipotle in the Inglewood community, made famous by Spike Lee's film Chi-Raq. You know, when I was going vertical with the Whole Foods project, you know, Spike Lee was filming down the block. You know, so here you have the media, you know, portraying Inglewood as a much of a maligned and troubled community, but we were trying to speak a different vision, a different understanding for how we can bring corporate investment into a disinvested community to make a turnaround, to create a ripple effect, to bring jobs, to bring opportunity, to engage local businesses. And so there, that was a historically successful corner. That corner used to be the second busiest sales tax generating corner in the entire city of Chicago, behind only the State Street and Randolph, where you had the famous Marshall Fields department store. It was one of the busiest corners in the entire country for a neighborhood corner in terms of sales tax generation. So you had muscle memory, you had infrastructure, you had all the things that you needed for a historically successful location just laying fallow. The next thing that we really focus on is anchor institution investment. We follow on with anchor institution investment and really help to energize and accelerate the efforts of that anchor institution. But why is that important? Anchor institutions are long-term, you know, investors in a community. Many of them, like many, you know, Fortune 500 corporate campuses, hospitals, universities, large public amenities have been sitting in communities that have deteriorated and been disinvested around them. But they still are there. And, you know, now they've transitioned from a point where they had a border wall mentality, you know, a hunker down mentality, a siege mentality, where the community sits beyond the walls. Now all those walls are coming down. As those institutions understand, in order to be competitive, continue to attract talent, they need to be good neighbors. They need to engage the local community. They are also coming to understand that, you know, the welfare of the entire city, the entire neighborhood rises the welfare of all. So how do we do that, right? How do they do that in a way that can be trusted, that can be valued, that can be executed? You know, so that's where we come in and play that role. And so we had there at the corner of 63rd and Halsted, we had the city of Chicago make its $250 million investment in bringing a historic community college to the corner of 63rd and Halsted, brand new buildings, and 12,000 students. So we knew that, hey, building the Whole Foods shopping center there would be an extension of the college. Whole Foods likes to co-locate with universities and colleges because the people who are getting those degrees and that education are also more likely to be care about their health and to invest in their health. So that makes sense. You know, that Starbucks in Chipotle is a home run. You know, people are visiting it, they're having meetings, they're having coffee, and you can come and visit me at 63rd and Halsted now any day of the week, and you're going to see a variety of people there, okay? So the next thing is, you know, so that anchor institution investment and co-locating with it is critical. But the third thing that's really important, and this is going to all tie into the kind of investor that you asked earlier, but the third thing that's really important is that we need to have a vacant land or underutilized structures. And so the reason that's important because we're practicing a form of development that does not displace. So we'd rather go where there's a historic location near or next to an anchor institution that has vacant or available land, and that's what we focus on developing because we believe that is what energizes the community, taking a fallow, underutilized structure or land and turning it into productive use. The fourth thing, the first three are very objective. Anyone can evaluate. The next two are things that take real time and energy and boots on the ground. And that is, number The fourth thing being you need to have strong community leadership. And the reason I say that, because often when you go into a new community for a commercial real estate project, if you don't have someone to interface with, whether it's a pastor, the local politician, or sometimes it's the fire chief on the block, you never know where it is that confidence and that belief in the neighborhood really finds itself to coalesce into that individual, but it's there. And every community has it. Has that person, you seek them out, you begin to dialogue with them, and they surface the true needs of the community, and you try to respond to those. You know, Inglewood actually was a challenging community for many people for many years, because there's over 900 different nonprofits in Inglewood, if you can believe that. Because of the media attention, because of the history of, you know, violence and disinvestment, you're going to have, you know, if you have a nonprofit located in Inglewood and they put Inglewood on their grant application, they get funded. Well, that attracted a lot of those social services. Well, I believe in studying not just the problems but the solutions in the community. You know, some of these communities might have 60%, you know, single-parent households, but you know what? They have 40% of two-parent households with kids that are trying to figure out how to make it, that are making it, that are providing a safe and secure environment for their children, that are raising those kids to be productive citizens. Study that model. Fund that model. Figure out how to work with those people, you know, and not just always focusing on the problem. So, you know, you start to have those kinds of conversations with people. How are we going to address the healthcare needs? How are we going to address the education needs? How are we going to address the security needs in that particular community? And so they believe you, okay? You begin to engage with them. Remember, no one cares what you know when you're doing community development. No one cares what you know until they know that you care. Then you can get a dialogue. Then they can believe in what you're trying to accomplish. It's very, very important. The last thing that I'll mention is that we need what I call brand-changing activity. Every community has a reputation, deserve it or not. They have a reputation that says, hey, you know, this is a good place to be, whether that's a, you know, a good and safe and, you know, a place where, you know, all sorts of, you know, interesting people are. Whether that's a deserved reputation or not, it may be actually an unsafe, challenging neighborhood, but because of the reputation, it is perceived to be a good place to be, therefore a good place to invest. Other communities have undeserved reputations about violence and safety. In over 5 years of work on the corner of 63rd and Hofstra in Inglewood, we have not had one major incident of violence. In a community that is painted widely, not only in the city, but in the entire country, as being mired in violence. So, you know, you have, you know, this disconnect between the media perception and the perception that the media feeds, I should say, and what is actually going on the ground in certain pockets of an overall broad brush of the communities. You know, for a while there, when Chicago had a tough reputation around violence and crime, people thought you get off the airplane over here and you start dodging bullets. Well, that's not the case. This is a beautiful city. You know, this city has much to offer. We're just trying to expand that, you know, into other parts of the city that have been disinvested. And we need to do it in a way that attracts people. We don't have an affordable housing problem in the city of Chicago. You know, we have an affordable housing problem north of the river. There are many places on the south and west sides of Chicago that are very affordable in terms of housing, but we got to create the environment where people want to live there. So what is that environment? Big three that I always point to. Number one, they want to know, where am I going to shop and eat? Number two, where are my kids going to go to school? And number three, how safe are my streets? You start to answer those questions. Then you begin to create neighborhoods of choice as opposed to neighborhoods of last resort. That's what we focus on. So the investor that I look to bring in line with our efforts, are those that say, we want to have a more equitable city. We want to have investment go out into the communities to change the narrative that we have. We believe that having investments spread out across the city will, in the middle to long term, create better prosperity for all. I'm not asking them, I don't want anybody to lose money, because we don't lose money. We want to provide market competitive returns for the risk they're taking, but we also double that with the social return, with the impact return. And so we are we provide the kind of development, and we use and we blend into the capital stack, you know, public subsidies, whether they be tax credits or local incentives. But we find a place, because this is what really energizes community development, is private equity, at-risk capital, you know, that is willing and patient, willing to go into the deal, and that's what, you know, really energizes and catalyzes that investment. And we want to do these kind of investments near anchor institutions in disinvested communities, where we can see the high impact return in terms of ripple effect in the community.
Well, Mr. Walker, a lot to be proud of, and we're certainly proud of what you're doing there in the communities within Chicago's South Side. Well, well done. Where can listeners get further details on DL3 Realty?
Yes, it's DL3Realty.com. That's D as in David, L as in Larry, the number 3, realty.com/venture development, all one word. That'll take you to a landing page where you can download the white paper, which goes into far more detail than I've given you here. I've given you the high points, and I know, you know, that has even hopefully gotten you interested in what we're talking about. But I go into even more detail for those that want to be more academic or more gain even deeper insight into the solutions. Let's study the solutions, not always the problems, but the solutions for how we can invest in projects that really encourage and improve and create a ripple effect in, you know, disinvested communities.
Again, Mr. Walker, it has been our pleasure to have had you on the program, and really have appreciated your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Really appreciate the time and opportunity to speak to your audience.
And you're most welcome. We've been speaking with Mr. Leon Walker, the managing partner of DL3 Realty. And once again, for further details, visit dl3realty.com. And this is Eric Dine. You've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. Tune in to our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live, with an app coming soon to accompany our live stream in the coming weeks. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we do thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks again for listening to Enterprise Radio here on the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. To subscribe for future programming, simply visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.